Michael, helicopters, of course, since Vietnam. How significant, since Vietnam especially, have helicopters become?
Well, I think, you know, I haven't served in Afghanistan or Iraq in these recent conflicts, but what I understand about the utilization of helicopters in general is they're almost the Jeeps of the modern battlefield. I mean, you're moving stuff, you're hauling troops. There's so many things that you can do with them. And it's, you know, when there's an IED threat, which there is on the ground, obviously, it's often considered a safer way to move people and equipment and things around. Now, who would ever thought we'd get to the point where we think flying helicopters around is safer than riding on roads? But it is, and I think if you took helicopters away from the commanders on the battlefield today, you'd really limit their ability to do what they need to do.
Now, you're Huey flying in medevac. Where were your medevac missions, and how dangerous were they?
Well, I've always said that being assigned to medevac as my first assignment out of flight school was the greatest thing that could have happened, although it didn't feel that way at the time. You know, a lot of what ends up in our lives, happening in our lives, is luck and chance and good fortune. So I didn't really want to go do that, but that was the assignment. And when I got there, I realized it was a fantastic assignment because in medevac, well, I had to progress to pilot in command status pretty fast. I did it like in 3 months. If I'd have gone to what we would call a lift battalion or a utility battalion, I probably wouldn't have been pushed that fast forward because when you're in medevac, you're flying by yourself all the time. And although it's not combat, it's usually a real-world mission, so there are potentially lives on the line, so there's a lot of decision-making, a lot of autonomy. And for a new pilot, you know, that's the kind of stuff you got to get exposed to because you start to learn. I mean, you're going to make mistakes, and that's how you learn. You learn from making mistakes.
How did you come to helicopters as opposed to wanting to fly fixed wing or something else?
Yeah, it's the first aircraft that I really got to go spend any time in was a helicopter. And I just thought that it was the coolest thing in the world. I was 14 years old. I'll never forget that first flight. And, you know, I'm thinking, what am I going to do in my life? Am I going to go, you know, work in the mill? I come from a mill town, nothing against it, but is that my career aspiration? Or do I want to do what this guy's doing over here that seems to be having a blast and he's getting paid to do it, you know? So from that moment on, I really set that as my target.
And where were you flying medevac missions?
In Korea. My medevac assignment was in Korea, and I enjoyed it so much I extended. Normally we're there for a year, but I extended and spent 20 months there.
And what were your experiences there?
Challenging, but very rewarding. You know, it's pretty difficult terrain for helicopters. A lot of mountains, a lot of wires. Seoul's a big city. You got the DMZ, you know, so there's a lot of things that you're dealing with there and don't have a lot of time to plan. You know, it's a medevac mission, so the phone rings, you got to go, and you're out the door. So as I said, it's a really good place to develop those decision-making skills and aviation skills.
Physically, when the bell rings, as you just suggested, how long does it take to get a helicopter off the ground? What's the process of being able to actually fly? How long does it take?
I mean, you can start it in about 3 minutes if you really want to. Now, that's, oddly enough, legacy aircraft are easier to start than current generation aircraft because in some of the newer aircraft, you got to get things spun up and get alignments to occur, you know, with the navigation systems and all that. But in these older aircraft, push the button, advance the throttles, and go. You know, doesn't mean you haven't done all the procedures you're supposed to do, but you do those ahead of time.
Right.
So you can get the aircraft off the ground in just a few minutes.
So, Jim, Bosnia, the A-10. So you've already flown a bunch of airplanes, and you move into the A-10. Describe what it's like to fly that airplane, and why is it effective?
The A-10 is truly amazing airplane in its own self. It's the premier close air support aircraft. Let me just regress for a second and say something about the dust-off Army medevac guys. When I was flying the Bird Dog and flying the A-4 in Vietnam, the Army dust-off medevac helicopter guys were some of the absolute bravest, most amazing guys that I have ever supported and watched in action. These guys would go in and pull out our wounded, Marines or Army, it didn't matter. But when dust-off got the call, they went in and they did it. And it was just utterly amazing, Michael, what you guys did. And
well, those were my predecessors, but it sort of set the culture for medevac and certainly all Army aviation.
Absolutely. The dust off guys, Well, there's children and ladies here, but they carried certain parts of their anatomy around in a wheelbarrow.
I might add that the last few years, Army General Pat Brady, Medal of Honor recipient, and Pat was supposed to have been with us today, but his wife has some health issues. But our hope is that General Brady will be back with us next year.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Now back to your original question
about
the A-10. The A-10 is a very unique aircraft. If you listen to any of the grunts, grunts being infantry guys on the ground, they love the A-10. It can carry a lot of ordnance, and it can stay on station a long time. It can put pressure on the target over and over again. And then with the 30-millimeter cannon that fires 70 rounds a second, we carried 1,142 bullets. And it is just the premier close air support aircraft. I know they're trying to replace it with the F-35, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, what's your view of that? And it's in the media all the time about those who want to keep the airplane and those who want to get rid of it.
Well, those that want to keep the airplane know what they're doing. And the you talk to the infantry guys, and the only airplane, not to say that the F-16 and the F-18 aren't great airplanes, because they are. I mean, they're fantastic airplanes in their own way. But the A-10, the Warthog, is a unique aircraft specifically designed for close air support, and it can stay longer, carry more. So it's just, they're making a big mistake. The airplane's been upgraded in the cockpit to what's called a Charlie model. It's got a glass cockpit now. It's got a lightning pod so that you can designate your smart weapons on your own rather than have another aircraft do it for you. But it's just it needs to be there.
So your early missions in Bosnia, tell us about the beginning for you of A-10 flying in Bosnia.
Well, when we first got there, it was Operation Deny Flight. So we were flying patrols over Bosnia just basically every day. We'd fly every day over Bosnia, working with the ground troops from all over the world. And then when the Serbs bombed and shelled Sarajevo Marketplace in August of 95, that's when NATO finally got the courage to do something, and we turned into Operation Deliberate Force, which we then started flying airstrikes against the Serbs. And it was really interesting. I led one of our first strike that morning in August, and we took off at 2 o'clock in the morning after about 30 minutes of sleep, and found our tankers in a pitch black night. Nothing like the sound around. Found our tankers, and then we went into our orbit points off of Croatia. And about that time, Magic, who was the AWACS aircraft, called me. My call sign was Mako 27. Said, Mako 27, go green. And I went green, which is secure radio. And they said, you're authorized weapons free, which meant we were going to war, basically, is what it meant. And of course, I authenticated them just to make sure that it wasn't somebody trying to fool us. And then I came back onto our tactical frequency, and I told our flight, I said, proceed to targets as brief, God be with us, and off we went.
How often were you shot at? What happened that day, when that first mission?
Well, that was a pretty interesting morning. My target was the largest armored repair facility in all of the Balkans near Sarajevo, in a town called Hidici. And my wingman, Dan Peabody, he was an attorney, so we called him counselor. So counselor and I proceeded over to the target. I checked in with the French Foreign Legion, Disney 6, who was the guys on the ground. And Disney authenticated me, and I authenticated him. And it was a clear day. I had the target. And I rolled in on the target, and from about 28,000, and
so
I was
still
using,
dark. Or are you in daytime now?
It was daytime. It was right at dawn, actually. It was just after dawn, and I rolled in. I locked up the Tret Assembly Building, which was my target, and just as I started to squeeze the Maverick off, and the Maverick, for those of you who don't know, it's a infrared guided missile. We could flip a switch on the inboard throttle of the A-10, and you'd get a video picture would come up, and you saw what the missile saw. So you could then slew and lock onto your target, which I did, and I'm just getting ready to release, and counselor starts yelling at me, "Nomad, Nomad, Sam, Sam, break, break." And Dan had never seen a real Sam. He didn't have any combat time, so normally when you tell somebody that, you tell them which way to break, but Dan was a little bit tense at that point, and so it was just an instantaneous decision for me, and I broke hard right, and fortunately it was the right way, and I picked up the missile as it was coming up, and I was able to defeat that missile, and then before the morning was over, I had six SAMs fired at me, and four anti-aircraft sites. Three of the anti-aircraft sites were silenced by British artillery off of Mount Igman, and then I took on this one anti-aircraft site that was out of their range, and it was like the gunfight at the OK Corral. I had tracers going by my canopy and flak going off, and I turned my gun on, and I started engaging him from about 9,000 feet away, and fortunately, I hit him before he hit me, and then I decided, you know, to get the hell out of town.
How many more missions did you fly in a Warthog?
In Bosnia, I flew another 42 missions.
Right.